TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, it's awfully quiet there where you are today. What does that say about our episode?
Well, Chris, it's been a day of introspection and reflection for me. I found myself talking to the wall, trying to figure out life and all of the things in between. I feel like the answer is 42, but I'm not quite sure.
Well, did you drink that whole bottle of whiskey while you were doing it?
I demolished that bottle of whiskey, so.
All right. Well, I myself, you know, I've been hanging out in 1940 Paris.
Oh, nice.
Preparing for this episode and getting some romance tips from Quark, of all people.
I mean, you know, sometimes he's got some good ideas.
Sometimes. All right. Well, it's been a while since we've recorded an orb, but I'm glad that we're back on mic together. And today we've decided to talk about episodes that are quiet, but powerful in terms of their storytelling. And specifically one episode from Deep Space Nine, The Sound of Her Voice, which is the next to last episode of season six. And contrast that a little bit with Shuttlepod 1 from Enterprise, because the idea for this came to me recently when I was doing an Enterprise rewatch, and I got to Shuttlepod 1, which is one of my favorite episodes, and I realized just how much it reminded me of The Sound of Her Voice in the way that it's so introspective and quiet, at least in terms of the storyline. The primary, the A-plot in The Sound of Her Voice, where they're trying to rescue this Starfleet captain who has crashed on an L-class planet.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because it's one of, when you think of ending season six and everything that happens in season six, I don't know if this is, you know, what most people would have expected for the penultimate episode of the season. And yet, I think one of the things, especially just, you know, rewatching it, taking this time to deconstruct where every one of these characters is for the most part. I mean, you know, we really get a chance to look at Sisko and O'Brien and Bashir as they're the main ones listening to this captain and really dig into the weight and the repercussions that the war has had on them and their lives and their friendships and just everything about what's happened and to them. And so it's really smart too, because obviously it's subtly, and you know, as you rewatch it, it's not so subtle, giving us the hint of what is about to happen, because you know, this is an episode two to which they mention, you know, one of us could be gone and Jadzia will be gone in the next episode.
Yeah, which was done intentionally because they knew she was going to be gone at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. And in this episode too, she only shows up at the very end as well. And so I think there's something just really beautiful about the way this is crafted, because I think even for season six, this is a little bit of a catharsis for us as viewers who had been watching the show, to kind of be able to process everything that had been happening to our characters and in the Star Trek universe. And so, yeah, I mean, this is an episode that takes that moment to do that, but it's completely advancing the story, because the story here on Deep Space Nine is about the characters. It's not just about overarching narratives.
Exactly. I don't know if you remember, Matthew, but We discussed this episode on the Ready Room back in 2014, you and I did, and we titled that episode The Quiet Before the Storm, because it really sums up kind of the role that that mm-hmm. episode plays in that transition between the war as we knew it and that final push that we get in season 7, and as you just mentioned, the fact that soon Jadzia would be gone,
yep.
which they intentionally foreshadow there at the end. And one reason I had this idea for us to discuss this is that I really enjoy the new Star Trek. I know you're not a fan of Discovery, but I enjoy it. And I've watched all the episodes of Discovery, I don't know, probably 5-6 times minimum for each episode. Some of them I've watched a lot more than that. So I do enjoy the stories. But what really stands out to me is that when we have this format that we primarily have with Star Trek today, where each season is a single story, and each episode within that season is just a bit of that story, and we're constantly being driven towards the finish line, often at breakneck speed. And it seems for a lot of the audience, whether this is true or not of a majority, I don't know, but certainly the producers seem to think it is. There's this need for action, constant action and visual effects, and everything's over the top, you know, to keep people's attention, to engage people, and to capture a broader audience, perhaps. And within that, we lose episodes like The Sound of Her Voice and Shuttle Pod 1, these very introspective episodes where we do get to pause for a moment. Without breaking the overall narrative, we don't completely abandon what's going on in the broader storyline, but primarily we turn a focus on the characters, what's happening to them internally and psychologically. And I feel like that's important for advancing the narrative. So for people who feel like bottle shows, which especially Shuttle Pod 1 is, it's purely a bottle show, people who think that these episodes maybe disrupt that flow of the story, how do you see it in terms of advancing the narrative?
Well, see, I think that's a really interesting thing. Obviously, today, you know, television, their goal is to have no episode that feels unimportant or unneeded or anything. And part of that is because it's all driven by plot for the most part. It's not as driven by character. Even some of the best shows, I think I would say the best shows overcome that by doing both. When I look back at an episode like this or Shadow Pod 1, I look at what it does for the characters and what it allows us to be able to have happen with them so that we kind of crack open their lives and get a chance to really know more about them than we ever would and put them in a different place than they were before as well. I mean, by the end of The Sound of Her Voice, these characters are ones who are resigned to being closer together, to letting go of kind of the distance that they've put between themselves and being the family that they actually are, you know, by talking to one another and spending time with each other. And I mean, gosh, even the Quark and Odo section of this, you know, where you really see the fact that these characters actually do like each other deep down, you know. And, right. and it's actually a great mirror for what's going to happen at the end, where Quark's going to say, that man loves me, you know,
like at the very end of the series.
Exactly. Right. Right? So, but this is a great, this is one of those places where I think these type of episodes help you to show, not tell. Right.
Yeah.
Like you're showing a relationship happen. You're showing progression for character growth and development. Shuttle Pod 1 does the same thing because Trip and Malcolm are kind of at odds until that point, and they become much closer friends because they almost die together, right?
Right.
They believe they're going to die together, and so it allows them to be able to open up and talk in a way that they never would have if they weren't in that position, and that episode didn't exist. And so, you know, when people ask me sometimes, what do you think about, like, 12 episode seasons, 10 episode seasons, or, you know, 22, 24 episode seasons. I think it's really all about how you use it. And I would say, yeah, obviously, yeah, Profit at Lace doesn't need to exist in season 6. But there are episodes like this that absolutely do. And so, I mean, if you're arbitrarily stuck to a number per season, that's when the main problem is, especially these days. It's like, tell as many stories as you need to tell a good story for the characters and tell the story you're trying to tell well.
Yeah.
Again, I think this is case in point for a reason why sometimes having longer seasons helps.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I like that there is some flexibility. We see, I feel like with the newer series, we see a little bit less flexibility in the number of episodes. The number's been dwindling, and it seems like they're starting to settle in with 10 or maybe 12. But I think it would be nice if, yeah, they have that freedom to add a couple of episodes if they need to, or cut back a couple of episodes if they need to. I especially like with the newer Star Trek, the flexibility in the running time, because the running time of Star Trek in the past was always driven by television commercial breaks. And, you know, if you look at Deep Space Nine, which we're talking about now, all the episodes come in within a few seconds of one another. Whereas with the newer series, you could have an episode that's 37 minutes and you could have an episode that's 58 minutes within the same season. So I like that type of flexibility as well.
Well, and I think, you know, obviously you see that play out in something like The Mandalorian, right? You know, like some of the episodes are shorter, some of the episodes are longer. And really, in the end, it's just about how much time they believe that episode needs to tell the story they're trying to tell in that episode. Which, again, I think is smarter. And it's a lot easier, obviously, when you're not having to pay attention to any kind of network schedule where you have to have, you know, so and that's where I think creativity then can reign. And and yet, again, these type of episodes, I think, show that having the creative freedom in the sense of having more time per season really helps. And I think, you know, one of the things that you know about all the Star Trek series, and I think Deep Space Nine and Enterprise are both really good at this, is that they're good at telling stories that connect together very well, but at the same time, being able to also tell kind of episodic tales as well. So you could do both. And I think, again, having more time per season allows you to be able to do that, which in the end really just plays to the strengths of character building.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the thing you mentioned a moment ago about at the end of the series when Quark looks at Odo leaving and says, "That man loves me." And in this one, we get the moment where Kira is talking to Odo, and Odo says, "Yeah, of course Quark's happy. You know, he's about to get the biggest profit, biggest paycheck of the year for himself." And he's willing to give him that one. He's like, "He'll get this one, but only this one." And that's that give and take, you know, that the two love each other. I was thinking, though, when we're talking about how these things advance the narrative, I feel that this is the moment that Sisko decides to marry Cassidy because of the conversations that he has with Captain Kuzak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're having this tough moment in their relationship. It seems a lot of strain because Sisko has let her into his life on the job as the captain in a dangerous situation, and he's feeling a lot, and you feel like it might go one way or the other, but because of all that quiet time that he spends trying to keep Captain Kuzak company, he starts really thinking about his own feelings, and in the end figures out, you know, how he feels about Cassidy. And at the same time, those quiet moments that Sisko himself has with Captain Kuzak advances the overall narrative of the war, because it's also a mechanism through which we learn more about what's going on in the war, more than we see on the screen. It's that time where they can fill us in on a lot of stuff and really advance that aspect of the story without needing to dedicate 44 minutes to battles all the time.
Sure. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. I like what you said, because there's the moment, too, at the very end where O'Brien talks about this idea of connection, being connected with that other. And there's this wonderful little moment where Avery Brooks kind of looks at Cassidy and just gets that moment of, like, it clicks in his brain. Like, you see it happen. So, and And I think it's so interesting because when I said earlier about this idea of show, don't tell, this is a beautiful episode in the sense that the way that they tell us allows them to get away with telling us things.
Yeah, right.
Because it's written all over the characters' faces. So they are showing it to us without having to necessarily show what's happening on Beta Z and the massive problems that they're having there with the invasion force and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just written all over the character's face. It's written all over everybody's posture, you know? And mm-hmm. I think there is something really great about that. And again, it kind of shows how you can really trust your actors to do something really important with the story and with advancing the story without necessarily having to go crazy effects wise.
Oh, yes, 100%. That's something that I really miss. And it's why I do love scenes like, going back to Discovery for a moment, just because we're kind of comparing this type of storytelling with the modern one, an episode like Lethe, and you have these conversations between Burnham and Sarek are those types of moments that I wish we had more of, similar to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so glad you mentioned that look on Sisko's face because Avery Brooks, he's a very eccentric actor and all, but he's also a very good actor. And it, just that little moment, that little look that he gives when O'Brien is talking, it's just so powerful. And it was like someone flipped a switch.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the super quiet moment that really moves their story forward into season 7.
Yeah. 100% agree.
In terms of other things here, going to Shuttlepod 1 for a moment. Well, okay. So with the sound of her voice, of course, what we're getting is we're getting to see the psychological impact that the war has been having on our main characters. And in Shuttlepod 1, I think we're also seeing the psychological impact that being on a deep space mission for the first time is having on our characters. And I love the contrast between the early days of space exploration and the attempt to hold everything together that we're getting in Deep Space Nine. And for Reed and Tripp in this episode, we see two people who are reacting very, very differently to a trying situation. A situation that, not to make light of the fact that they might suffocate, but their situation is very small compared with what the crew of Deep Space Nine is dealing with the Dominion War at that point. But at the same time, it's very new for them being in deep space like this. And I find it interesting the contrast between how they each react to the situation. You've got one person who is kind of giving up. They've just decided this is the end, and so they need to run through their life again. And then you've got the other person who is going to find a solution.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of the way they are both kind of these life and death situations for both of the episodes, and that they do play out differently. Shuttlepod 1, it's more immediate, right? Like the idea of that they could die,
right.
And they are going to probably
there
die.
There is a timer on it.
There is a ticking clock, And I do think, though, that the real beauty of what we see in the Deep Space Nine episode is that there's a timer on it as well. And it's not the character's death, like any of the characters we know, but it is a character's death, and one that we come to really care about as we get to listen to them discuss their life and the way in which that character helps these characters find things in their lives that aren't necessarily going very well and all of that. And so I think there's a real beauty in that, and that in the end, what creates the sense of salvation for the different characters is having their lives cracked open and coming to a better understanding of themselves and the people around them. And so I think that's really beautiful, just how the episodes really do kind of parallel each other in some really cool ways.
Yeah, and thinking about how, going back over to the sound of her voice, how this type of thing impacts our characters, that kind of like needed break, you mentioned how they come to understand more about how things are impacting them. The buildup to the conclusion of the Dominion War, you know, the buildup of the war has been quite serious. And I think here it was important that we got that break. It's like hitting a pause button for a moment in that. The war is still going on outside around them, but we're able to pause for a moment and have a break in the narrative meaning the Dominion War.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you feel that the story would have played out if we didn't have something like this? Like if we had the action just keeps building and building and building through the end of the season, and then we head into the other. And I mean, even thinking about what happens to Sisko at the end of the season and his decision to leave and go back to Earth, how do you feel like this moment impacts even that? If we didn't have this type of episode here right before the end.
I think that it is a really important moment, especially for the character of Sisko, because it gives us the moment to allow the audience to catch up to where the character is going to be with regards to him proposing to Cassidy and being in that place. And then it makes it so devastating then with everything that's going to happen at the opening of season 7, mm-hmm. where, you know, he's going to leave and it's going to be this kind of all out assault on that character and his belief in the prophets and everything. And so I do think that this is an important moment, and it's an important moment, I think, for all of the characters involved, because they are about to have this massive life-changing event, which is a main character, one of the characters to which they all love, is going to die. And mm-hmm. this stopping and kind of realizing how important people in our lives are around us moment allows us to feel, I think, that impact even more so yeah. when, you know, Jen Zia dies.
Another interesting thing here that I wanted to get your thoughts on, and for those who either haven't seen the episode, The Sound of Her Voice, and are listening to this, or more likely you've seen it, but you don't remember it, because as we're saying, it's a very quiet episode and kind of gets lost. It certainly did for me on the first few watch throughs of DS9, kind of gets lost there near the end of season 6. So if you haven't watched it in a while, if you don't remember it, you might want to hit pause, go watch it, come back, or just skip over this little bit here. So this is a little spoiler alert, but there's a big twist at the end. So Matthew, I wanted to get your thoughts on the twist. And of course, the twist is that Captain Kuzak is actually from the past. She's already been dead for a long time when they finally get there to rescue her. And somehow they tech the tech and in a DS9 way. Somehow something about the nature surrounding the planet is causing the radio signal to get warped through time. But what I'm curious about is how you feel that element impacts the story. Is it just like a fun little sci-fi thing tacked on to the end? Or is there something deeper to the fact that our characters in the present are talking to someone in the past as they reflect more internally on, you know, what the war has done to them psychologically, where they are in their lives, and how they move on beyond that? Because Ronald D. Moore said that originally, this was core to the concept of the story. So does it matter that we didn't know until the very end?
I think that, to me, it makes more sense to have it at the end, because I think that what it does is it brings together and really heightens the lessons that they all learn from mm-hmm. her by her having been dead, right? And the fact that by the time they get there, she had died. In many ways, the whole point of this is that, you know, obviously Jan Zia is going to be gone, and to not have to go through these things alone, you know, to be there for one another. And I think that that's heightened and intensified by her not being able to live, you know, however that happens, you know, and in some ways, I think it also, it does kind of help us see what the war has done by having a character who hasn't been impacted by this at all, who's been out there doing the Starfleet mission.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, that there is danger to that mission just as much as there is danger to protecting the Federation at wartime, right? Starships get lost or destroyed all the time in the routine mission of exploration of space. And so I think it helps bring home that, yes, this is exactly what we're defending the Federation to be able to do again. But at the same time, it's always a dangerous mission. You know, Kirk said, risk is our business. And so I really like that. And I don't honestly feel like it feels tacked on. I feel like what it does is it punctuates the theme of the episode at the end for our character specifically, so that then it helps like catapult them forward into making the decisions that they do, especially the ones that were on, you know, the Defiant.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of putting it. It punctuates it at the end. I can see a science fiction story. I can see a Star Trek episode where they know they're talking to somebody in the past. If they had known that, there wouldn't have been this sense of urgency. There wouldn't have been this timer on the story to go rescue her, I think, because they, especially Bashir, probably would have figured out that she would be gone by the time they got there. The original, very original concept of this story was that Sisko was going to be, somehow he like picks up a radio signal from the 1940s. I think it was Paris 1940s or France 1940s, which is interesting because that's the holosuite program that Odo chooses to commemorate his first kiss with Kira. But Sisko was going to pick up this radio signal from the past, distant past, and form like a romantic relationship with this woman, which of course wouldn't make sense given that he's with Cassidy. And in the ultimate version of the story that we got, we have this very important introspective moment for Sisko in terms of how he feels about Cassidy. So that wouldn't have worked. But the story that we got, if they knew they were talking to someone in the past, I think it would really weaken the impact mm-hmm. that her words have on the characters. And I think, as you say, punctuating it at the end is a great way of looking at it. And I remember the first time I watched it, I thought, oh, wow, that's kind of a shocking thing because I never expected it. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't, and even watching it again after a long time, sometimes you, because it's just at the end, just that moment, you don't think about it while you're watching. And then you get to the end. And once again, you're like, oh, right. Yeah. She was disembodied in the past.
Well, it seems almost too like that choice feels way too much like City on the Edge of Forever type of territory instead of this.
The original, you know? Idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I think that this just works better in the end. And I think it works better because it allows you to interact with more characters and what they're going through. And at the same time as well, then that impact is felt by more of the crew.
Right. Yeah. The evolution of the story is interesting because, you know, it was written originally by an intern on the show. The original story concept came from her. Her last name is hard to say, but it's Pam Petroforte, however you pronounce Petroforte. And then Ronald D. Moore wrote the teleplay to go with it. But the concept of the story, I thought was fascinating that it came from someone who was an intern on the show and who really doesn't have other writing credits other than she did statistical probabilities with Bashir later on. I think there's only two. So it's really interesting. So the fact that the original concept, as you say, maybe it mirrored at the City on the Edge of Forever a bit too closely, I can see that happening, and then I can see how the hand of Ronald D. Moore and the others on the writing team refined that into what we got. I was going to say that in terms of it being from the past, though, I also feel like you know, sometimes things are bothering us in our lives and we think back to our past and we think about decisions that we made, or we think about how certain moments in our lives have impacted us, led us to where we are, and then we find insight in those things that help us take a next step and move forward. And so I've always read this a little bit in that way too. The fact that she's in the past, even though they don't know that, is kind of a parallel to that idea of looking back to your past and reflecting on what might be bothering you and helping you move forward. So for me, there's that little bit of little extra to the concept of her being stuck in the past.
Yeah, I think that's a great thought. That, I mean, because I do think that in many ways, this whole episode is one specifically about characters coming to a reckoning as to where they've come, and that they haven't really had moments to sit and think because of the just consistency of the war. It's been right. Driving them.
Yeah.
Further and further from the ability to just have a moment to contemplate what has become of them. And so I think that's really something that's really smart. And I think what it really does is it really helps us show that we do need those moments in our lives to be able to have quiet moments, to have peaceful moments. And we also need to make sure that we have those peaceful moments to share with others so that they can help us come to grips with where our lives are. It really does show the need that we have for community instead of isolation. And the isolation mm-hmm. causes more problems than it helps. You know, I mean, if we learned anything from lockdowns, I think it's the need for community, you know, and the need right. for people. So I think that's something that's really beautiful about this episode, is everyone in this episode is reminded we need each other and I can't do this on my own. I think there's something really beautiful to that.
Hmm. Definitely. So I guess as a last point, just returning to the idea of how these types of episodes within a season advance the overall narrative and actually help the season or help the series itself evolve in a richer way. What are your last thoughts on how episodes like The Sound of Her Voice and Shuttlepod 1 advance a series and advance the franchise as a whole, and why they're needed?
They're needed because they are quiet. And I think they're needed because they do help us to be able to have a moment to just stop.
And you mean us as the viewers, not just yes. the characters mm-hmm. on the show, yep. right?
Exactly. Yeah. To be able to stop and appreciate character growth. Strangely, my wife and I have been watching through Mad About You, and we are in the first season.
Yeah.
And there's the wonderful episode where they stop the show, basically, and they tell you how they met.
Mm-hmm.
And that show of showing you where these characters used to be helps you appreciate where the characters are now as you continue yeah. on with the rest of the season.
Exactly.
And look, all of these different shows, they all happen in different ways, and they all kind of will look different depending on what the show is. But I do think having a more quiet episode, or an episode that kind of like breaks the mold and allows characters to be able to really understand where they are in a new and exciting way helps us as viewers be able to do the same thing. And I do think too, the constant drumbeat on a show as well can just get tiring, you know, when a show is relentlessly driving you and there's no time to be able to process whatsoever, even as a viewer, it's not as rewarding an experience. And sometimes like it can just leave you like, man, I need the show to be over, you know? And I think it's definitely a balancing act, you know, because sometimes you can also get those shows where you just feel like nothing's happening.
Right. Yeah.
But I think these are two great examples of the ways in which they can really benefit not only those who are watching the show, but also the overall effect that they have on the show itself.
Yeah. As you were talking, I thought of two more examples that are, they're not as quiet and introspective as these two episodes are, I think, but similarly on Enterprise, Dear Doctor, and on The Next Generation, Data's Day, where those are both the structure of writing a letter, basically, and going through daily life. Those types of things also, for that individual character, are very reflective and really kind of pause what's going on and help us appreciate and get to know a character better. A single character, which I really like. Okay. Well, that was a fun, a little a different discussion, talking about one of what I consider one of the best episodes of Deep Space Nine, actually, and yet one that I think gets lost in the mix quite often. So if you'd like to share your thoughts with us on The Sound of Her Voice or Shuttlepod One, we're also happy to talk about Enterprise. You can drop us a line through our website at trek.fm/contact. That's if you'd like to fill out the form, and that'll come to us by email. Or you can join in the conversation on Facebook in our listeners group called the Babel Conference. It's probably the best place if you want to engage with us and other listeners at the same time and have a discussion about today's topic. You can find that on Facebook if you're not already a member by typing B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. It should come right on up. But if it doesn't, just type the full name. It is a closed group, so please do answer the questions and agree to the terms, the rules of the forum, so that we can let you in. And then you can also find us on social media, of course. Our username on Twitter is TrekFM. That's our username pretty much everywhere. We have an Instagram account, which Matthew maintains, and you can find out what we're doing there as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not sitting in the corner talking to disembodied voices from the past, where can people find you and all the other stuff you're doing?
Yes, well, you can always follow me there on social media. Name's MattRushing02 on the different platforms like Twitter and whatnot, so you can search for me on them. I'd love to interact with you and have your follow and be able to talk to you about all sorts of great things that we've got going on. And of course, you'll see everything I've got coming up as soon as it's dropping with that. Of course, here on the network, doing the 602 Club, which is a blast as we talk about all the fandoms outside of Star Trek that we love. When it's a lot of fun. We've even got some short run shows that are going to be happening as well. We've got Snyder Cuts in there in that feed, and got a new one coming out with John Mills soon. So take a look for that. We'll let you know on social media when that's dropping. Of course, also doing Literary Treks with you, Chris, and then Bruce Gibson, as we talk to the authors and we talk about Star Trek books and comics, which is a blast. And then over on the Nerd Party, you will find me doing two shows. One is finished now. It's called Outpost. I did that with Drea Kaufman, where we talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then also doing with my good friend John Mills, Aggressive Negotiations, talking about Star Wars each and every week. So, Chris, where can people find you?
Well, you know, you can find me planning holosuite escapades with Quark and Odo, always trying to figure out what will make Kira happy. But besides that, in terms of podcasting here on the network, you can find me from time to time with Larry Nemechek on my main show called The Ready Room. And we talk about the franchise, the business side. We talk about the newer series a lot, like Picard and Discovery and Lower Decks and all that stuff. And of course, there's a huge back catalog to The Ready Room going back to 2011, where we talk about all sorts of things, especially episodes in detail. And as I mentioned in the discussion today, Matthew, there's one episode 139 of The Ready Room is our discussion of The Sound of Her Voice from 7.5 years ago. So maybe our views have changed a little bit since then. You can also find me on Interphase, which is a Star Trek Universe podcast that we're getting going. And also, Matthew and I have another little project that we're working on that we're going to introduce to you all pretty soon. So stay tuned for that. And if you'd like to chat with me, Twitter is where I'm most active. My username there is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I am the most active. And yeah, that's pretty much what I have going on. If you would like to help us keep everything going here on the network, we definitely could use your help as we make our way through what has been a very difficult year and a half. You can support us through Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to help us cover the costs of production and bandwidth and distribution, which are quite high, and also help us move forward with some plans we have for retooling the network and bringing you all sorts of new content. So thank you to everyone who's supporting us there now. And again, if you would like to join the team, visit patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to getting together again soon to talk about some more Deep Space Nine with you and a few other things as well.
Well, Chris, we want to thank everybody for joining us, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.
Recording. Captain Kuzak's past pants.
Ooh.
Pants from the past. Sounds like the title of a Legend of Zelda game.
Pants from the
past. The Legend of Zelda. Pants from the past.